Case number 13-1241, William D. Rogers et al. Appellants v. Commissioner of Internal Revenue Service. Ms. Rogers for the appellants, Mr. Tafe for the appellee.
May it please the court. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Yanling K. Rogers, and I will present the argument as an attorney pro se. This is an appeal from the U.S. Tax Court. This case is purely a legal issue on how to legally interpret my earned income from United Airlines Hong Kong domicile under the statute. The U.S. Tax Court ruled that my income from United Airlines Hong Kong domicile was earned income attributable to services performed in airplanes and airplanes flying over foreign and non-foreign territories. Therefore, my income is not 100% foreign earned income. Such interpretation may sound logical, but in fact, it's not the legal interpretation under the statute for many reasons, which I noted in my briefs. Here, I will summarize some of them. Flight attendants based in the United States treat their earned income attributable to services performed in their home bases or tax home or place of abode and pay state and federal income taxes accordingly, no matter where the airplanes they work fly to. The same earned income interpretation should have applied to my earned income, even though I'm based in a foreign country. Under 26 U.S.C., the definition of earned income is the same in all instances. So far, all the court cases, except the ones involving United flight attendants based in foreign countries, treated all the qualified individuals' income as 100% foreign earned income, no matter where the services were performed, because the interpretation has always been if they met all the criteria to be qualified individuals, their income was from source of foreign earned income.
What do you say the source is for you? What is your, how would you define source?
The source, I was just gonna get to that. The source of foreign earned income defined in section 911 is based on many criteria, which include but not limited to taxpayers' tax home, main place of business or place of abode. And in section 911, it clearly they use many different examples and regulation language to define source of foreign earned income. Using the U.S. Tax Court's revised interpretation of earned income will allow flight attendants based in the United States to claim foreign earned income if they fly trips to foreign countries. Now, income attributable to services performed in foreign country cannot be interpreted as income from services performed in foreign countries. Attributable is not defined in section 911, but it means source. Clearly, the interpretation of foreign earned income is focused on the source of foreign earned income rather than the actual location where the services are performed.
And what do you say was your source? What was your source?
My source is income attributable from services performed in Hong Kong, not in airplanes, because under 26 CFR section 1.911-2B, airplanes were just one of my temporary workplaces Therefore, I receive travel expenses away from home when I fly. Therefore, airplanes is not my main place of business. Similarly,
is your employer United, as the international company, or is there a United Hong Kong subsidiary, or?
I can't really answer that, but it's United Airlines. They set up office in Hong Kong for flight attendants based in Hong Kong.
Did you, I know you mailed in your appeal to the tax court. Did you introduce any evidence in the tax court about the time at which you mailed it, that you met the time limit for filing an appeal?
Yes, Your Honor.
What evidence was put into court?
Regarding the time?
The time that you filed.
I have been a qualified, bona fide resident of Hong Kong since 1993. Mm-hmm. So this was never really challenged by the court.
Oh, I don't mean that. I mean when you filed your papers appealing to the tax court, you had to file papers and you mailed them, you say the end of May in 2011. And did you put evidence of the time of that you filed your appeal in the record?
I don't really understand
okay, that's okay.
What you're trying to ask me.
Okay.
I don't really remember the detail of time.
Mm-hmm.
But the U.S. Tax Court already agreed that I am a qualified bona fide resident of Hong Kong, and Section 911 applied to me, and I should be able to be treated the same as other qualified individuals and be allowed to elect and exclude my income from my gross income.
When you did your guarantee pay, can you talk to me a little bit about how that worked and where you were for the guarantee pay?
Sure. Guarantee pay is from originally I made a sign to a San Francisco trip, Hong Kong, San Francisco, back to Hong Kong. But for some reason, maybe mechanical, our trip is canceled. So I don't have to fly the trip. Instead, I have to stay in Hong Kong, and United Airlines will see whatever other trip they can assign me to. They can assign me to a Saigon trip, or a Singapore trip, or a Chicago trip. So it depends. Mm-hmm. But in my briefs, that particular guarantee pay was, I was not assigned. I was in Hong Kong and waiting for my employer to give me other assignments, which mm-hmm. they didn't.
So you just stayed in Hong Kong the
yes,
whole time?
I had to be in Hong Kong. I couldn't go to other places. Mm-hmm. And therefore, my employer paid me guarantee pay for the trip that they canceled without any of my control.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever have guarantee pay? Does it ever happen that you would have guarantee pay in a city in the United States, or does it always only happen in your originating city of Hong Kong?
Guarantee pay can be guaranteed, but I will still have to fly back to Hong Kong in order to get that guarantee pay.
Okay.
And I could be deadhead. Deadhead means I travel as a passenger,
mm-hmm.
And that's also considered on duty.
When you travel as a passenger, because the flight was canceled,
right.
That's still considered duty time.
Yes, that could happen. So pretty much like a passenger, when you travel on the airplane, there are many factors out of your control, and it could happen we divert to another city because someone got sick or a mechanical reason.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
So can I continue to use the rest of my time? Anyway, as I stated in my briefs, there were many sections clarified that my pay from United Airlines should not be deemed as income from sources within the United States, such as 26 U.S.C. Section 861, A3, C2, and also under 29 CFR Section 825.111. For my profession, my work site is the site to which I am assigned as my home base, from which my work is assigned, or to which I report. Therefore, the legal interpretation of my earned income from United Airlines Hong Kong domicile is earned income attributable to services performed in Hong Kong and not in airplanes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Damon Tafe, and I represent the United States. The broad rule on the United States tax system is that the United States taxes all income from whatever source derived.
Before we get to that,
sure.
I want to talk about jurisdiction, because their commissioner ruling came on December 30th, and they had 150 days to file their petition with the tax court, and that's jurisdictional. And your brief says it was timely filed on June 6th, which is more than 150 days after December 30th. And so I'm wondering what evidence, I know there's, they can satisfy it with filing through the mail, what evidence was put on for the tax court to establish timely jurisdiction?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. Jurisdiction was never argued about, and so I would be happy to file a letter brief if you'd like answering that question. But as I stand here, I'm just not sure exactly how the jurisdictional issue played out, because it was just never litigated. Getting into the merits, though, unless an exception applies, as I said, all income is taxed from whatever source derived. And the exception here is in Section 911, which says that if you're a qualified individual, and there's no doubt that Ms. Rogers is a qualified individual, then you're allowed to exclude all foreign earned income. And there are four types of itineraries that Ms. Rogers flew in 2007, which is the year at issue. They comprised a total of 37 round trips. And 32 of these 37 round trips took her over international waters or over the United States, one or the other. So pretty much flowing from that, it's clear that during those times, on certain percentages of those flights, she was not working under the jurisdiction or within the territory of a foreign sovereignty. So therefore, she was not earning income. She was not earning foreign earned income during that time.
What about the guarantee pay issue? Do you dispute that she spent 100% of the guarantee pay time at issue for this year in Hong Kong?
I don't dispute that.
And so why is that not treated as 100% Hong Kong time and not taxable?
The reason is because that time is allocable to what in the percentage of the tax code.
Why is it allocable? Why? I don't understand it. It's by definition time that was not spent flying, and by definition time that was spent sitting in one place, and it happened to be Hong Kong here. I don't understand why that's allocable at all.
It's under the same logic as the other benefits that you would get, such as vacation pay and that sort of thing. It is, that is to say that the money is paid because of your obligations as a flight attendant. It is a benefit that you get in lieu of the income that you
benefit. It's not something you don't earn and rack up guarantee pay hours. It's actually getting paid for sitting and waiting for a new flight to come in that you can work on. It's not something you earn like sick leave or vacation leave. I thought that was your theory for allocating those. But that's not how guarantee pays works. It says, I'm paying you to stay in Hong Kong till I find another airplane for you.
That's correct, Your Honor. I'd need to go back and look at exactly how this was computed, because there was...
it was computed with the same allocation formula, and I'm trying to understand why on earth that allocation formula applies to the guarantee pay when there's no factual dispute about either what happened in this case, that it was 100% Hong Kong time, or that what the nature of guarantee pay is?
It may be, Your Honor, that in the one instance of guarantee pay, I think, which is a fairly de minimis amount, but it may exist, it may be that the proper character of that would be to be 100% foreign. But to the extent that's true, it would be probably less than $100 one way or the other, and it'd be a computational matter that'd be pretty easy to work out if we needed to do that.
Wasn't the allocation stipulated?
It was stipulated, yes. The flight times, the flight percentages were stipulated.
Including all of it was stipulated, right?
All of the factual information, yes. So, in other words, the character of the guarantee pay was obviously not stipulated. It was litigated. But the actual flight schedules that she flew and all of her flight data, as far as we can determine it, were stipulated. So there wouldn't be any fact-finding necessary one way or the other. The only question is the legal character of this one flight, I believe it was, in that year.
And she didn't stipulate that those hours were spent anywhere other than Hong Kong?
No. No, there's no stipulation with respect to that, other than what Your Honor said. I mean, there's no dispute that she was in Hong Kong during that period, which was, I think it might have been a question of taxable income on $1,000 or something like that. So it might have been probably $50, I would guess.
It appears that the commissioner also allocates other pay, like vacation and training and so forth, based on this same allocation sort of formula. Is that correct?
There are two separate concepts there, Your Honor. I think training pay is not included in the allocation. That was taxed separately. It wasn't really an issue in the litigation. Because training pay is compensated separately from flight time under the terms of this collective bargaining agreement.
But vacation and and sick leave, I assume, goes under the same allocation.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. And is that because it's tied in the commissioner's view? It's tied to flight time.
Yes, Your Honor. It's not just the commissioner's view. It's the collective bargaining agreement says that it is compensation based on flight time, as all of the compensation is, unless it's separately delineated, and the training time is separately delineated. But you accrue sick time and vacation time based on your flight time. Okay. It is compensation for flight time in a non-monetary sense. And so in the view of the commissioner, that's compensation for being over international water some percent of the time and foreign jurisdictions some percent of the time.
I read the agreement as saying that vacation and sick pay was actually linked to the length of employment rather than flight. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're right about that, but it's that the rate at which you accrue vacation days does increase as you get more senior, but you're only paid those vacation days to the extent you work the flight attendant equivalent of full time, which is to say you fly a certain number of legs, and therefore once you do that, it qualifies you to earn vacation and sick time according to the terms set forth in the collective bargaining agreement. But if you're not working at all, then you're not accruing vacation and sick leave. And you're only, in other words, the computation is not independent of the fact that you're flying these legs. It's directly dependent on that fact. So to that extent, it makes sense to compensate in the same way, which is to say the extent that the financial compensation is allocated according to foreign income percentages, then so too should be these other benefits.
Well, I'm confused, particularly with the sick leave in that regard, because you don't tax it when it's accrued. You only tax it when it's used, right? Sick leave, you don't tax the accrual of it while they're flying around the world. You tax them because on a certain Thursday, she stayed in Hong Kong in bed rather than go get on an airplane because she was sick, and that's when she gets paid? And she's 100% in Hong Kong, and presumably the employer wants her to not be on the airplane, actually wants her to be at home getting better. So I'm having trouble understanding why the accrual link is even relative to the taxation of it.
Well, I don't know that it's any different than vacation time. I mean, from the airline's perspective...
Maybe not, but again...
Well, from the airline's perspective, I don't work for an airline, but I imagine their perspective is that this person is not able to work on a particular day. She could just as easily get sick in the United States as get sick in Hong Kong. The relevant question, though, is that because she would have been flying on an airplane, and there's no question about that, but for the fact that she got sick. And so just as she gets sick, the question is the nature of the work that she's doing, that she is getting paid for. She's not getting paid for being sick, in other words, per se. She's getting paid a lump sum that includes some monetary benefits, includes some vacation time, includes some sick time for flight time. And just as if she took a vacation day, she could, presumably the airline, under Your Honor's theory, would say, well, I want you to be not working. But the airline is agnostic as to whether she's not working in Hong Kong or she's maybe in Hawaii on vacation. I just don't know.
No, they may be, but I guess you've set up a system here where sort of hour by hour you're tracking where they are. And it's all set, I know it's estimates, but it's set up under this concept of where are they supposed to or expected to be. And I think if you ask any airlines where they're expected to be when they're sick, it would be not on the airplane.
Well, it'd be not on the airplane, but as to where not on the airplane mm-hmm. would be, we just don't know. I mean, she could be, I don't know if there's rules relating to this, could be flying deadhead during that time and simply not on duty per se. Could be sick in the United States, could be sick in Hong Kong. But most relevant, there's no facts in the record with respect to where she spent any of this time, and it was incumbent upon the taxpayer under the burden of proof to challenge the determination that the IRS sent out. That's presumed to be correct. And she introduced no evidence of that one way or the other. So I think that from both a legal and a factual perspective, I think the tax court got it right in this respect, which is that it would be a nightmarishly burdensome system, I think, to even if this is a legal perspective, correct, which we're not conceding, but from a factual perspective, to have evidence adduced as to where somebody spent every minute who was not on an airplane. I mean, presumably that's what would have to happen, and there's just no evidence of that in the record. But I think the cleanest answer is from a legal perspective, sick leave and vacation leave are just non-monetary forms of compensation. And just as the legal character of compensation doesn't turn on where that money is spent eventually, so too the sick leave doesn't matter where it's taken, and the vacation, the tax system doesn't particularly care where you go on vacation. This is all compensation resulting from flight time under the collective bargaining agreement. And so these ratios to which she stipulated should govern that as well. I see that my time has expired.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Rogers, if I understand that you didn't have any time left, but we'll give you 1 minute.
Under 26 CFR section 1.911-3 provides rules for determining the amount of foreign earned income that is excludable, and only limitation of the foreign earned income is mentioned. My income from United Airlines was well below the limitation, and the only allocation mentioned in this section is if you are over the limitation, then you use qualifying days to allocate such foreign earned income. The commissioner's interpretation of earned income is not a legal interpretation. And I quote from previous tax court cases, the judges say the commissioner submits that the regulation is reasonable under the Chevron doctrine when evaluating the reasonableness of a rule issued by the commissioner. We must assess whether the regulation harmonizes the language, origins, and the purpose of the statute. If I may, I would also like to point out that the U.S. Tax Court also made a mistake and stating that United Airlines allocate my income between United States and Hong Kong. I submitted my pay statement, and in that statement, only the Hong Kong exchange rate is mentioned. That is the only thing. United is not able to allocate my income between U.S. and foreign. They couldn't even provide us the actual flight data. What if we use U.S. tax court's interpretation, we are forced to use estimated time. All the court cases before, the qualified individuals, they perform services in different places, like Jones, U.S. pilot, flew for JAL based in Tokyo. He was a qualified foreign bona fide resident of Japan, okay, and he was able to exclude all his income as foreign earned income.
Thank
even
you.
Though,
we understand your argument. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Taylor, could you return to the podium for a moment?
I forgot to ask you, how do you explain the cases that she has cited where all the income was excluded?
Those cases deal with a separate question from what's at issue in this case. They deal with whether somebody is a qualified individual and when that person becomes a qualified individual. They don't deal with, once somebody is a qualified individual, actually breaking down percentages of where they spent their time and the allocation between those places. All of those cases followed under the rule that we're urging, which is that you allocate it based on where somebody was located. There's a string of tax court cases. Many of them deal with United Airlines pilots, but they all flow from this revenue ruling in 1977 that states how those should be treated. They should be treated on as close as you can determine to determining where they actually spent each minute of each day. But the short answer to your question is that there's no doubt that in the cases that she cites, the holding of the court is that once somebody becomes a qualified individual under the statutory regime, that the person can exclude foreign earned income. And obviously we concede that because we concede that she's a qualified individual. But the question then becomes, once you're there, how do you get to the percentages?
Thank you. The case will be submitted.